patient. Love takes time. Trans in love. Take an hour, stay a while.
I love you.
I'm in a weird mood. No, I said I am.
I was just mirroring. I was just empathizing.
Welcome to Trans in Love,
a podcast
where we talk about being trans
and in love. Can you believe it?
I'm Ezra Michelle.
I'm El Duran.
And we are married.
We did that thing.
And we're trans.
We did that thing too.
We did it.
We chose it. I chose this lifestyle.
You did.
That's what they say. I'm kidding.
Yeah, take that back.
Take it with a grain of tits.
Listen, speaking of tits,
we
really wanted to talk about
today we're going to talk about surgery.
We wanted to talk about the one thing that being trans is all about.
The one thing.
Surgery.
Just ripping up our bodies.
Mutilating. They love that word.
They love mutilation. They're like, look at you. You're mutilated. It's like, girl, look at you. You didn't even have surgery and you look mutilated.
Whoa. That's a read on them and their physical appearance.
Yeah. A really positive thing to do is comment on people's physical appearance. You look mutilated in your spirit because you look hate. You have hate in your heart.
You have hate in your heart. And it shows in your face.
Hey, I want to apologize about that read.
All right. You want to take accountability?
I'm going to take accountability. I'm going to be accountable right now. It's not okay to judge someone's physical appearance, even if they're conservative and look
ugly.
That's not okay. And, you know, let's be real. Most conservative people are ugly, even if they're hot, because they have hate and intolerance in their heart. Okay. How are you feeling at this moment?
At this moment, I feel incredibly frustrated. I began my day with being one of those customers that people talk about.
Yeah, and you were on the phone with customer service, and you put your foot down. It was so hot.
I was really angry because we've been waiting for these samples for these shirts we want to launch for the past like month now, and they've attempted delivery so many times.
Yeah, like 10 times.
And it's just like, I know they're not attempting.
Yeah.
We get mail all the time here. It's not that hard.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on.
It's very frustrating, but it was really sexy the way you stood your ground this morning. You said
no. Thank
you. But you were speaking in Spanish. You were like, ya no tengo paciencia.
Yeah, I said that.
Yeah.
I did.
He was like, yeah, sir, you're just going to have to be patient. You were like, I'm not patient. So what do we do now?
Yeah.
You said, who can I talk to? And they were literally reading a script.
Yeah.
Reading a script and just dwindle. I know it's not that guy's fault, but also I know there's something they could do.
There's someone else I should be able to speak to if they can't help me.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
The thing. Like they're not helping by escalating the issue.
Right.
They're just saying the same thing over and over again, which is, please be patient, sir.
Please be patient.
And
it's
I say,
its way.
I'm done with that. Mm-hmm. Please do something else.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I started my day with that, as you know, and it just is snowballed from there. And now I'm starting a new website because of this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like done with this service.
Yeah.
So yeah, I miss screen printing my own stuff. I miss fulfilling all my orders myself. I miss the control.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah, even though you would work like all day and all night to fulfill these orders, like there was a process that I remember you really loving about it.
Yeah, because I was in charge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there weren't so many channels that things could go wrong, and it was just me and then the shipping carrier.
Right,
and it was like two variables, and now it's like a million.
Yeah,
people I don't know.
Yeah.
You know.
And strangers, I don't know about them.
Yeah.
I don't know about them. People I don't know, I don't know.
Yeah, you don't know.
You know?
Yeah.
And exactly. That's,
that's the whole problem.
That's the whole problem with strangers is I don't know them.
Yeah.
How am I supposed to trust a stranger with your business?
Yeah.
When you don't know them.
Right.
That's, it's in the word. Strange.
It's strange. Strange. Yeah. It's like when you're driving and then there's a car that's like poking out trying to see if they can, you know, mm-hmm. turn right.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to get kind of close to the street to see. But
I don't trust
you
them.
You don't trust them. You're How like, am I supposed whoa, to whoa, trust whoa,
you?
Whoa.
I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You better stop.
Yeah.
Stop, 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 stop. Hop up.
Yeah.
You know, in high school, time. We used to joke about that. The hop up. That feeling.
Yes.
Of a hop up.
Yeah.
Or you're like, hop up.
Yeah.
Stop. Stop it. Don't hit me. Don't murder. Yeah.
What a crazy reaction right? to almost being murdered.
Hop up.
Hop up.
Well, actually, it came from when we were in high school. We were in the car and my friend was driving and he was like peeking out, trying to take a left turn, and a biker was going by. And then the biker, as the car was going up, went, hop up. And so it's, you know.
Yeah, that's funny.
And thus a religion was born.
Yeah. You and your high school friends have jokes that
we have jokes
remain.
That live in me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel that way at all?
About my high school friends?
Yeah.
No.
Are there any jokes in high school that like stick with you?
No. None. No.
What would you say is like the earliest inside joke that sticks with you?
Oh, well, I guess me and Lulu had Whitney and Brittany. They were alter egos.
Oh.
We had a whole thing. We made videos that didn't get posted anywhere. They weren't meant to be posted anywhere. They were just for us.
Who were these girls?
They were like blonde.
Like Whitney.
Yeah.
And Brittany.
And Whitney and Brittany. And we were dating Chad, Brad, Brett, and Bra. And Brett and... What is it? Chad, Brad, Brett, and Brad.
Chad, Brad, Brett, and Brad. There's two Brads. And then Whitney and Brittany.
Chet.
Chad, Brad, what?
Brett and Chet.
Yeah.
And Whitney and Brittany.
So you were a poly... These girls were
no,
poly.
We would like cycle through them.
Okay.
And we'd be like, I thought you were dating Chad. And I was like, I'm dating Chad this week. I'm dating Chet this week. And then, no, I was talking to Chet.
I love these characters. I mean, these characters live in us.
Yeah. Yeah. But I didn't really have a friend group that was like very comedy focused. Mm. They were mostly stoners who they all thought they were funny.
Right.
I was
oh, dude, look at this leaf.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much that. But you had, like, comedy friends. They were all funny.
Yeah,
we were
all theater
really
kids.
Funny.
Yeah, there are still jokes that make me laugh today. What's another one? Well, you know what's coming to mind?
Mm.
Is the first time I got high.
Okay.
Okay, I thought that it was in high school.
Sure.
I thought that I saw a bear in the trees. And I remember being like, oh, my God, is that a bear? Like, I really wanted to be feeling something. Like, but I felt different, but I wasn't hallucinating in the way that, like, you know, they say you were gonna.
They were? They said that?
You know, I mean, you know, in DARE.
Marijuana?
Did you have DARE?
Yeah.
Drugs and.
DARE to keep kids off drugs. DARE to.
DARE to respect elders. DARE... What is it? DARE to research ecstasy. DARE to. What is it?
Well, I don't. Drug.
Drug and...
And... Roads.
No, I don't know what DARE stands for. Leave it in the comments. But did you have that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, well, they came... A police officer came to the house.
Mm-hmm. To the house?
To the house being in the school.
To the school.
And, like, basically went through all the drugs and explained how horrible they were.
Wow.
And then, like, we had to write an essay about how we weren't going to do drugs. And whoever wrote the best essay would win a teddy bear. That had a DARE shirt on it.
Wow.
I didn't win.
That's good motivation.
I'm so upset I didn't win.
I would want that teddy bear.
Yeah. What about the first time you got high?
The first time I got high was in a 7-Up can pipe.
Wow.
That I made, even though it was my first time. And I was like, oh, I think I can understand the concept. The guy like the guy with the weed was trying to do it. And then I was like, let me do it.
Yeah.
And then I took it away from him. And then I was like a professional.
Yeah.
From the start. I just knew what to do. I was so excited.
Mm.
My sister was there. She was facilitating it.
Wow.
And I got high right away. I was, you know, like some people say they don't get high the first time.
Yeah.
But I really did. Yeah, and I was like, I was like a lesbian. And mm-hmm. I was around all these boys, like two boys. And I started like hitting on them.
Wow.
Feeling really horny.
That's such an unexpected reaction.
But I had eaten a garlic pizza earlier that day. All to myself.
Oh, wow.
And a lot of garlic on it.
Garlic.
And I tried to kiss Sam Westervelt.
Wow, Sam.
As I was melting into the carpet. And he was like, I would, but you smell like garlic.
Wow.
And I felt so ashamed.
Oh, that's crazy. You know what's interesting is that, like, I never understood why people don't like the smell of garlic when it's in someone's breath.
I agree.
Because, like,
it's not that bad.
Garlic is a beautiful flavor.
Yeah.
And it's a delicious smell. We love it when food smells like garlic. Yeah. So, like, what's wrong with a mouth smelling like garlic?
I don't get it, honestly.
Yeah.
I've tasted garlic on your breath.
Really?
Sure.
It feels like one of those things where it's like we all decided we hated the word moist.
Mm.
It's like culturally we just decided sheep. That we hate
just a bunch of sheep.
And then it's like culturally we decided that we're going to hate garlic breath.
Yeah.
Like there are people who won't eat garlic because they don't want their breath to smell.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. I know. I don't get them.
I like recently though have had like fear that I have smelly breath.
Recently?
Yeah.
In our marriage?
Yeah, recently. Like recently, the last like month or two.
Whoa.
Do I?
Sometimes. We all do though, I feel like, don't I?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like during the day in a time when I shouldn't have smelly breath.
Hmm. I haven't noticed that.
Okay, that's cool.
I just noticed like morning breath.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's human.
That's normal.
You smell that?
Maybe the dog farted.
It wasn't me.
Yeah, it wasn't me either. This is pretty bad.
Wow, this is a 4D experience.
Yeah, Winnie. It was Winnie. How are you doing? How are you doing, my love?
I'm doing good. I'm like anxious and jittery today a little bit because I submitted my deposit for FFS, which means that I am in this.
There's no going back.
There's no, we're doing this.
You're committed to the bone shave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's happening soon.
Yeah. So soon. October.
Yeah. For a podcast exclusive that no one's ever heard. October 6th is the date that we're looking at. And it's so crazy.
I know.
Which means I have to pay this in full on September 6th. So that's soon.
That's so soon.
Yeah, that's like in a week.
We're going to be in Mexico City.
Yeah, for a wedding. And I'm feeling just anxious, mm-hmm. just anxious about it. I mean, also really excited. It's just one of those things where it's a complicated thing because it's a huge change. And I feel ready and excited and so fulfilled by it. And also like terrified because it's a major surgery and terrified financially of like,
yeah,
is it gonna destroy me? Cause I haven't met my GoFundMe goal yet. And it's also vulnerable asking for money on the internet. And I feel some shame, even though my mind is combating that shame, like the shame still happening.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid that I'm going to be depressed after. Because, like, when you get surgery, your body, like, responds. And your body's like, what'd you do?
Yeah.
And that it's going to take time for me to feel that euphoria that I'm doing this for. And so I think I'm just anticipating the challenges mm-hmm. of surgery. Which is interesting that I can know and be aware of all of these challenges and all of this. I can have all of this fear and even shame and still 100% know that this is what I'm supposed to do.
That's some transgender shit right there.
It sure is.
That there's not really an option.
Yeah, exactly.
Like it feels so worth all of everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Do you have feelings about it?
About you changing
up?
Your face?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I'm noticing myself like lingering while I look at you more.
Yeah.
I think just wanting to like kind of memorize
mm-hmm.
what your face looks like
mm-hmm.
now, because I love you
mm-hmm.
and that's it. I mean, I'm like so excited for you. That's mostly the overwhelming feeling.
Yeah,
of course. But yeah, I'm going to like, have to adjust to the changes, you
know?
For
sure.
But yeah, I think like what you said about anticipating just the depression, the aftermath of it all, I think is really smart
mm-hmm.
to just like be aware of, because I think when you're early in surgery journeys, like where you haven't really had one yet, it's hard to imagine being depressed after getting the surgery that you've been so stoked on for right. so long. But I think going into it, knowing that that is going to happen, just being like expecting it is really smart.
Yeah,
I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because my first surgery like took me out.
Mm-hmm.
Like that really affected me.
Your hairline.
Yeah. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. Talk about it. What'd you get done?
I got hairline surgery. So I got a new hairline.
What's the process of what yeah, that, yeah. like, how do they do it?
Yeah. I'll just take you through the day.
Mm-hmm.
So we got there at like 6 a.m. Three doctors came in and then they started to draw a hairline on me of mm-hmm. what it might be. And tell them what these men wanted to do to me.
They were really hell-bent on giving you a widow's peak.
A sharp.
Sharp.
Widow's peak.
A sharp heart-shaped face.
Giant heart-shaped face. And here's the thing. I didn't want that. Every time, like, I was like, I think this is a little too extreme. They would, like, erase the marker off of my face.
Erase and the triangle yeah. that they drew.
And then they would draw it again. And it was still really intense.
Yeah.
And thank God Ezra was there because he was like, honey, no.
Yeah. I was really, really yeah. blunt about
yeah.
it. Because I saw your face, too. And like, you were not happy.
No, no, no.
And I was like, didn't you want like a rounded hairline?
Yeah. Yeah. Finally, we reached one that I liked and then you had to leave
mm-hmm.
and then you left me. They wouldn't let him stay, which was so annoying. The surgery starts. They give you a Valium and they numb the back of your head with a giant needle. And then they flip me over and then they shave off a piece of my hair. And then
like a rectangle
yeah, like,
shape.
Yeah, like a long rectangle along the back of my head. And then take that piece of skin off.
While you're awake
and numb. And okay, Valium, it didn't do much for me.
Mm-hmm.
I was fully coherent.
Yeah.
Fully like, okay, I don't feel anything, but they are tugging me. You think yeah. like when you think of surgery, you think, okay, they're really gentle. No, they are like, I'm like, my head's like swaying back and forth. I'm like, oh yeah. So they took that piece of skin off and sewed me back up. And then they flipped me over. The doctor takes a tiny little needle, essentially, and pokes. They poked 4,000 holes in my skull. 4,000.
In your skin.
In my scalp. In my scalp.
Yeah.
On my head. The nurse is counting. And they're like, just sit back and relax. And then they're like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Up to 4,000. Counting to 4,000. And when I tell you, the numbing, like I think my body was processing the numbing like a lot quicker than other bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Because I started to feel it. And I was like, ow. Like I'm starting to, this starts to hurt. This is like hurting. They're like, it shouldn't. I'm like,
great.
And so,
I agree.
And on top of that, like the doctors and nurses were misgendering me. I left at like 9 p.m. You picked me up and I just sobbed.
Mm-hmm.
I sobbed. I sobbed. I sobbed.
It was so sad.
Yeah.
And I knew just there was something
mm-hmm.
wrong. I didn't know how bad mm-hmm. it had been.
Yeah.
But like you just fell apart
mm-hmm.
and you couldn't really explain exactly what happened
right.
yet.
Right.
Because you hadn't really processed it.
Yeah. And then after that, like, I really started struggling with addiction.
Yeah.
Because I, like, was given strong pain meds, and it gave me relief from the emotional trauma of that experience. And I don't think that that experience inherently had to be so traumatic, but it was a combination of it, like, of the numbing not working while they were misgendering me and physicalizing that pain of dysphoria that just...
In the spots that were so, like, dysphoric for mm-hmm. you to
yeah.
begin with. Like, you were going in there to heal this mm-hmm. pain
mm-hmm.
and get relief from this by mm-hmm. going through this process that was going to be so intense
yeah.
but not painful.
Yeah.
Not like you weren't supposed to feel
anything.
No one's supposed yeah. to feel surgery when it's mm-hmm. happening.
No. And there were moments throughout the surgery where they were, like, redoing the numbing, and I was just crying because I was in so much pain.
Mm-hmm.
I remember being really worried that I wasn't, like, that I was running out of pain meds. And so that's when I started, like, really having edibles a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, like, I was drinking, but mostly I was doing a lot of edibles. I remember, like, the day where I ordered so many edibles to the house because I was like, I just don't want to feel this. So that started, it was 3 months of struggling with depression and self-medicating. And then it was like June that I got sober. And then I remember once I was able to take my little scarves off and let my hair down, and you braided my hair, and, like, I saw the fantasy, I was, like, beaming.
Yeah.
It was, like, all of a sudden, I saw myself. And now I'm so happy.
Yeah.
That I did this. Mm-hmm. Every day I look at myself, and I look at my hair, and I absolutely love it, and I feel beautiful, and it feels like me, and it's just... It's wild, the journey that it took to yeah. feel this sort of freedom.
Yeah, it is crazy.
So I'm, like, really carrying that with me into this new experience where yeah. luckily I'm not going to be awake for it. And I think that's going to be huge. And
yeah.
the place that I'm working with, they specifically deal with trans people. They've been incredibly affirming. They're amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel so held and protected by them. And I feel really confident in feeling affirmed in the experience.
It's like night and day, mm-hmm. I think. And
yeah.
I think you were very intentional about finding somewhere that was definitely not going to give you the same experience.
Definitely. Yeah. So, and I know you had a really dramatic experience with your first surgery,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, unfortunately,
yeah.
I did. I had a super traumatizing experience with surgery. Like, my top surgery was botched. Botched.
Mm-hmm.
By a surgeon who was, like, just, like, marketing himself as this guy who knew how to do top surgery so well, and ended up wanting to minimize the length of my scars. So he ended up doing a method that didn't exist yet, where he was, like, wanting to connect my nipple and the scar itself. So it ended up being connected where, like, the nipple was in, like, ended up being, like, in a spot that was not T. It was, like, on my rib cage, like, under my pec muscle, in closer to my armpit than it should be. And then the scar was, like, shooting out from the nipple upwards in a diagonal direction, which is not... It's not...
That's not supposed to be that way.
No.
Contrary to popular belief, doc.
No.
Your nipple's supposed to be somewhere else.
And if he had... Like, if we had discussed this, like, beforehand, and I knew what his plan was, that would be one thing. But he didn't explain this to me at all. So I went in thinking I was going to have double incision, just, like,
whoa,
really, really classic, like what I have now. And then I wake up from surgery and he was like, I actually decided to do something different.
That's like illegal.
Yeah. It felt crazy. And I was like, oh, okay, well, you're the doctor. So I was being really trusting, you know, and then had a whole week of being binded in this, like, you know, surgical dressing. Mm-hmm. And then he bound. And then he
bound.
And then a week later, I go in to get it all removed and I see my chest for the first time. And if you're trans, you've seen those reveal
videos.
Like, they cry because they're like, oh my gosh, it's my chest. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing myself for the first time. So mm-hmm. I had watched like hours of those videos for years because I just was so excited to get top surgery one day.
And to have that feeling.
It's all I wanted. And then it happened and I looked in the mirror and I was like, huh.
Oh no.
I don't know. Oh, okay. And my sister was there and she was like, huh. And we were both just like, what?
That's crazy.
And then
the doctor Picasso'd your tits.
Yeah, totally. And he was super arrogant and really like macho and was just like, yeah, you know, I just kind of like thought that you would want this because it's a shorter scar this way instead of having it be like a whole long one. And the thing about double incision is that when they follow the contours of your pec muscle with the scar line, it ends up like looking pretty natural, mm-hmm. even though there's a scar there. Because it follows the contours of your body.
Yeah.
But this was just like random, just really wrong. I'll show a picture in the podcast, in the video version of this for the patrons. Because it was gnarly. It was really gnarly. And then no one was validating me after that. So I would show my family like, hey, like, look at this. Or I'd show my, like, people in 12-step program. Because I was really newly sober at the time. Mm. I had, like, 60-something days. And I was like, guys, like, this is wrong, right? And they'd be like, I don't think so.
Yeah, just trying to be supportive. Good. But invalidating.
And I was like, just tell me the truth.
It's art. It's art.
They were like, is it supposed to look good? No. Ugh. And yeah, so no one was validating me, and then finally I ended up going in for a consult with this surgical institute called the Krieger Institute in Thousand Oaks, California, and I had gone in for a consult with them before I had gotten surgery with this other guy because my insurance didn't take them, and so I was like, okay, I'll just go in with whoever my insurance puts me with. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't the Krieger Institute. And then I went back to them being like, hey, I went to this other guy and this is what he did. And they were like, oh man, they messed you up. And I was like, thank fucking God. Somebody could just tell me the truth.
Yeah.
And obviously they were also trying to sell me on giving me a revision.
Yeah.
But still,
yeah.
I was like, girl, thank you.
Yeah.
And then I got it revised after 6 months of calling my insurance company almost every day trying to get this approved.
Yeah.
They denied it 6 times.
Wow. That's amazing how hard you worked to get your entire transition covered.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I did. It is not easy.
No.
It is not built to be easy.
No. What it did teach me, working so hard to get this covered, was how to advocate for myself and like show up for myself in this new way that I was now able to do now that I was sober. Because previously, like, I just wouldn't have been able to commit to myself in that way. Like, I remember trying to do research to figure out how insurance worked when I was a stoner, active stoner. Now I'm an inactive stoner.
A dormant stoner.
Yeah. It still lives in me. But
it lives in you.
But yeah, it really like taught me how to just be on my own team and be like, no, I deserve this. This was wrong. And finally, what sent it over the edge was after the 6 denials of them covering this under the pretense of it being cosmetic, in their opinion, I was like, let me just send you photos. Can I just send you photos of what's going on under my shirt here? And they were like, that's not necessary, Ezra. And I was like, I'm just going to do it. Where's the email? And then I did. And the day that I sent those, they approved
it. The same day.
Yes.
That's amazing.
After 6 months.
Yeah.
I was like, gag.
That's amazing.
But they were like, oh, shit, that's wrong.
Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Trying to, like, explain it in words.
Yeah.
Like, my nipples are in my armpits.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I don't know how else to say this.
My nipples are in my armpits.
And they are an oval shape.
Yeah.
And they are incorrect.
Right. Yeah, it's like a melted wax candle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was trying to use words.
Yeah.
It just wasn't working.
Yeah. I am really proud of you for doing that.
Me too.
And I want to like talk about why it's not cosmetic, because I think that's a huge misconception.
So real.
And I've noticed that a lot in response to people when I announced that I wanted to get FFS, that maybe 100 comments saying, but Elle, you're so beautiful, but I understand whatever you need to feel like good. But it upset me after a while, because like I think that people who don't have this experience are like comparing it to like getting a facelift.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a completely different surgery. Yeah. Like facelifts, they do not touch your skull. This is about changing my skull to appear more like feminine.
Yeah.
And I even struggle with that language, because I know it's all made up and there's a range, but that's what I love about this place, is that like they're not trying to turn me into the object of their desires.
Ugh.
Or some sort of like, some sort of Jessica Rabbit cartoon of a woman. And it's okay for those girlies who want to look like that. Like, I just want to look just a little like more quote unquote feminine. And that's like the language that we have to explain that.
Yeah.
But like, there's a like range of what a skull looks like for a cis woman. And there are overlaps, mm-hmm, of like cis men, or like there are overlaps. And so,
yeah,
which is why there were things that they said to me, like, you don't need to get that done, because that is like within a traditionally like cis woman range.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I think that what I want people to understand about these surgeries is that like, this isn't about beautifying, even though I feel like I am going to feel more beautiful. It's about like recognizing yourself,
mm-hmm,
and having a face and a body that looks like mine. And mm-hmm, it's a hard feeling, I think, for some people to understand who don't have that feeling of looking at yourself and not recognizing yourself. And the closest they can compare to that feeling is their feeling of being unattractive.
Yeah, dysmorphia, mm-hmm, too. Yeah. Is
and some people
one.
Have even called dysmorphia in the comments. They've been like, yeah, tackle that dysmorphia.
They don't even know the difference between dysphoria and dysmorphia.
And the thing is, I have that, too. So, like, it happens at the same time. But,
totally.
And there are overlaps there, too. But, like, what was your experience before you had these surgeries?
Trying to be alive?
Yeah.
It was not good. Mm-hmm. It was bad.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was hard. And I couldn't know how hard it was until I was on the other side of it, being able to reflect back and be like, whoa, that compared to this is real different.
Mm-hmm.
Like the energy that I used to have to like expend just to like have a social interaction was so much more back then.
Yeah.
Because it was like having to constantly focus my attention on this other person when I'm having such like an internal struggle to just like breathe through my binder.
Yeah.
And to feel like I'm hunching enough so that there aren't lines showing on my shirt. Mm-hmm. And like watching other people go swimming and being like, no, I'm good.
Yeah.
Like there were so many things that I couldn't do because of like having tits.
Yeah.
As a boy.
I remember that feeling with my hair. Like there so many things that I didn't do because of it. Yeah. Like I remember there was like a photo shoot I was doing for a musical, and then all of a sudden they're like, okay, now the rain's gonna come on and we're gonna take wet photos. I'm like, oh my God, like this is gonna, I'm gonna feel so dysphoric in these photos. And
yeah,
I did.
You had a whole system going on.
Yeah, I sure did.
You were so good at hiding your hairline.
Yeah. And even now, like I notice the ways that when I'm in public, I use my hair to hide my face.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not that I'm ashamed of it. It's that like, it's mostly when I'm in like the women's restroom. It's like, I'm scared of them looking too close.
Yeah.
Like I feel like in broad strokes, I like look like a girly depending on what I wear. But then I just like look closer and I just am like, it's like the feeling is like, who is that man? That's what the feeling is in my body. Who is that? And I just know as I age, that feeling is going to get worse. And I'm just so excited that I get to bring my skull to a baseline where I can age and look like myself.
That's so real. That is so real.
I'm so excited.
It's everything. It's like, I think that's a good word to use, baseline. Because like, I could tackle my eating disorder from this body. I could tackle my like substance issues. I could tackle all these other things that like many psychologists and mental health professionals gave me advice to tackle before I even started transitioning.
Mm.
I remember going to a psychiatrist and being like, hi, I hear voices sometimes. I'm like, my mood swings are crazy. I want to kill myself often. And I'm trans and I haven't started hormones yet. I was 18. And she was like, well, before you do anything like hormones, I would really prefer that we start you on some medication. I remember being advised to not do anything with trans stuff until I tackled my mental health issues.
Yeah, wow.
And then I was like, I actually can't listen to your advice,
you
mental health professional.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I'll be alive by then. Like,
yes.
You
it's,
know?
There's, it's so misguided.
Yeah.
Because the noise of dysphoria is such an incredible distraction. And that was a huge reason why I also realized I wanted FFS is because I felt so insecure. It was so hard for me to look at myself. And I thought that it was just because I was insecure.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, I am. And also, there's this giant thing where, like, I don't know who I'm looking at.
Yeah.
And that's, like, that disconnect is so... It is such a distraction from being able to learn how to love myself because I don't recognize myself. How do I learn to love someone that I'm looking at in the mirror who I don't even know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I know who I am. I know who my heart is and who I'm looking at. Like, that's not who that is. And I'm like, finally bringing that incongruence allows me to be a more like a functioning person in society.
Yeah.
It's going to help me tackle my depression and anxiety. And it's going to help me feel like I deserve to be seen. And also the unfortunate truth is it's going to help me feel safer out in public.
Yeah.
Cause I am so scared to go into a woman's bathroom. And I'm also just as scared to go into a men's bathroom.
Yeah.
So it's like, where do I go?
Yeah.
I don't know where I'm safer. And unfortunately, like, I hate, like, this isn't the core of the reason why I'm getting FFS, but I am so excited to be able to go into a woman's restroom and not fear that someone is going to say, what are you doing in here?
Yeah. It's huge. Mm-hmm. It's huge. I've watched mm-hmm. this fear like manifest in so many ways mm-hmm. that like not just in the bathroom, but also in the way that like I know you as the kind of person who likes to connect with people and smile at strangers. Mm-hmm. And I've known that about you, but I've never been able to really witness you
yeah.
in that way, because from the second we started dating, you were already like being shown by the world that that wasn't
yeah.
welcome anymore
yeah.
from you.
I think that's probably the most heartbreaking experience of being trans.
Yeah.
Before coming out as trans, like I was the person who was walking down the street and like smiling at everyone. And I was such a social person, and I loved meeting people. I loved meeting strangers. And then when I came out as trans, I maintained that and was met with like horrifying reactions. Like, people saying disgusting or like just, or avoiding eye contact because they feel uncomfortable looking at me. And that is something that like I really miss yeah. because like I feel like I have closed off so much, and I feel like now I live in this small tiny bubble and I only let people in who I know I feel safe with. And I don't think that's all entirely bad, but I just feel like isolated from the world, and that's not something that I ever would have chosen for myself, but it's mm-hmm. something that has been created because of people's resistance and hesitance and discomfort mm-hmm. and their own shame and self-hatred. And
that just like, it pisses me off too, that like that a lot of the conservatives like points mm-hmm. about us is, why make your life harder by transitioning? Mm. And why like ostracize yourself from society by making everyone uncomfortable? Like, why would you do that to yourself? Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, that's not the conversation we need to be having. Yeah. It's, why does that make you so uncomfortable in the first place? Why does looking at me make you want to hurt me?
Right.
That's the conversation that I'm interested in having. Mm-hmm. Not, why would you make this decision mm-hmm. to be your authentic self because it's going to be dangerous for you because of me and my friends?
Yeah. If if we lived in a world that always accepted and supported and trans people and was built to uplift trans youth and get trans young people the care that they need, then being trans wouldn't be hard. Mm-mm. The dysphoria is uncomfortable until you get the care you need.
Yeah, there's like a solution.
Mm-hmm. There's a solution. The only thing, once you are able to get the care that you need, that makes being trans difficult is the global response to it.
Yeah.
Is other people.
Yeah.
The problem is not in us. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people think, even trans people, think that it's like a sickness, and I understand there's like insurance reasons why people want to keep it deemed that way.
Yeah.
And I can see that as playing the system, but ultimately like I see it as evolution, as like a sign, like the fact that trans people exist serve a purpose to prove that these superficial structures that we are living in are malleable and not all based in reality.
Yeah. That we can play mm-hmm. and change and transform, and like it's proof that the binary that we as we know it doesn't really exist mm-hmm. in the way that we're taught
yeah.
it does. And it freaks people out mm-hmm. and I mean it's like the first thing that we all learn is what a boy and a girl is yeah. and what the differences are, and like what no one wants to talk about on that side, on the conservative side, is that like those beliefs are the beliefs of a 3-year-old child. Mm-hmm. Like we learned that so young.
Yeah.
And
to the point where it's considered to be an ultimate truth.
Yeah.
And really we've all just been conditioned to see the world in this binary way.
Yeah. And so their little three-year-old brains mm-hmm. are just exploding trying to think about mm-hmm. it in a different way. The thing is, too, is that like trans people have to go through that exact thing, too. Mm-hmm. I had to have my mind blown.
Yes.
When I learned about trans people. Mm-hmm. And then when I related to them, it freaked me the fuck out even more.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like we were just exempt from being raised in the same society that taught right. us about the binary.
Right.
And so it's not like I empathize mm-hmm. with them. And I also am like, bitch, I went through it.
I woke up.
Yeah.
Like, I woke up so you can too.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like we're not an like exception.
Right.
And I just, it's so infuriating to, see things clearly and see the ways that the gender binary is so oppressive for everyone, especially the cis women who are anti-trans, like who it feels so obvious that like they are perpetuating patriarchal narratives. Mm-hmm. Like they'll say like, you can't be a woman because you've never gone through what I've gone through, or you can't have children, or you like, you don't have a period, or you don't have the parts where that can be possible. And the thing is, I did not have the experience of a cis woman growing up, and I was not treated like a man. I was treated like a failed man mm-hmm. because I was trying, I was trying to squeeze into the behaviors of what a man is supposed to be, and I failed miserably. And mm-hmm. I was treated like a woman trying to be a man. Mm-hmm. I was the same patriarchal narratives that oppress women, cisgender women, like reached me in the form of completely squashing and attacking and shaming my femininity.
Right.
Seeing my femininity as weak.
Right.
And so while I didn't have the experience of a cis woman, never claimed to, I had the experience of a trans woman right. growing up. And that affects us all.
Yeah.
So saying that because I didn't suffer in the same way that you did means that, yeah, I didn't. And also I suffered for the same reasons you did.
Right.
And that's and if you're saying that I'm not a woman because I didn't share that and I don't share that with you, then one, you're minimizing womanhood to one specific form of suffering. Mm-hmm. And also, like, you're minimizing womanhood to a capacity, the ability to give birth and be a mother, which is completely the patriarchal narrative that's all women are for.
Right.
It's like,
but they've transformed it in their head to be this like beautiful thing mm-hmm. that's like expansive and like new agey mm-hmm. so that they can justify perpetuating it
right.
and staying like not questioning it.
Yeah.
But it's still the same bullshit
yeah,
when
is.
You boil it down.
It is.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's just infuriating to see like cis women perpetuating the patriarchy in the name of feminism
yeah.
and then ostracizing a group of like people who are suffering for the same reasons they are.
Absolutely. We all suffer because of the patriarchy mm-hmm. in our own special ways.
Our own special cute different ways.
Cute different ways. I love the concept of failed man and failed yeah. woman though, because mm-hmm. I really relate to the failed, like that idea of like having been a failed gender assigned at birth, like mm-hmm. a failed girl. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no way in hell that I could actually fully embody the reality that I was socialized as a girl.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't looking at the girls while I was growing up. Mm-hmm. I was looking towards the boys.
Right.
To learn the lessons they were learning.
Right.
And to appropriate their experiences mm-hmm. and project myself into their realities mm-hmm. as a kid. Cause yeah. I related to them more. So mm-hmm. of course, not consciously, I was just like, oh yeah, like whatever they're being told is what I should be doing.
Yeah.
You know? And not every little girl was doing that. And so like it was a trans boy's upbringing.
Yes, exactly.
I was socialized as a trans boy.
Yes, I was socialized as a trans girl.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing, is that like I was bullied and abused because I could not be socialized as a man.
Right.
And I tried and tried and tried, and they tried, and to the point where I started to give a great performance and was so dissociated where I felt absolutely nothing for 10 years of my life. Mm-hmm. Until I came out as trans and started crying again. I started feeling again. I started loving again. And it's not because of the rules that I was given. It's actually, I believe that I'm able to feel and love so deeply because my experience utterly contradicted the rules that I was supposed to follow.
Yeah.
And now that is the greatest gift in the world. While there is discomfort with dysphoria, the beauty of transforming myself and feeling more freedom and feeling the discomfort on that journey is the most valiant journey I would choose over and over and over again, because there is a sort of knowing yourself and relearning and transformation and like out of the chrysalis that is so profound. Then when you look at yourself one day and then you see how you've changed and that you like what you see, is like, that's a feeling that I think if everyone felt, there'd be no issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And you, I mean, get ready.
Yeah.
Because if you already know that experience, like mm-hmm. you already do have moments where you recognize yourself.
Yeah.
But like, we talked about this recently, mm-hmm. like when we were talking about, you know, just the journey to realizing how much you needed FFS mm-hmm. to feel comfortable in your skin. And like the thing about testosterone is that once I started it, 6 months later, my face completely changed.
Yeah.
I started passing as a cis boy. Maybe I was passing as a cis 12-year-old boy, but I was still being seen as a boy, like through the world, just like all, like pretty much immediately. Mm-hmm. And you are several years into your transition and you do pass as cis often in my experience, but there's still that fear and there's still that, like, it's just not the same. Mm-mm. Testosterone and estrogen don't do the same things. And like I feel so passionate that you deserve the experience of being able to look in the mirror mm-hmm. and not question and not have to squint mm-hmm. or tilt your head
yeah.
or see it in a different light in order to recognize yourself.
Yeah.
That's an experience that you deserve.
Thank you. I agree. I can't even imagine looking in the mirror and not like glazing over my eyes.
Yeah. It's available.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's on the horizon.
It's so soon, baby.
I know. I'm so excited.
I think that there's this joke that happens where we talk about it within the trans community, like that surgery is just not like that we're often minimized to surgery, mm-hmm. like in the conversation, like, oh, have you had the surgery? Blah, blah, blah. Like, and so we kind of downplay it and are like, this isn't a huge part of our transition. It's not the whole thing. There's more to it.
Yeah.
But I also, my experience is that like, it was one of the most powerful things that I could do for my quality of life mm-hmm. to improve as a trans person. And so while it's not like everything that I am, obviously, it's still like such an integral part to my medical transition. And I don't think that I'd be able to be this person that I am today had I not had access to the surgeries that I had.
Yeah.
Like I got my hysterectomy and then within a few months, my bottom dysphoria dissipated so much that I was ready to start using the word pussy to describe my pussy.
Yeah.
And then I started an entire brand about it right. within 6 months of my histo. Wow. That's how powerful it was for me. And then it changed my whole life because of that. Yeah. You know, like these things give us access to all of the crayons in mm-hmm. the box, yeah. like RuPaul says.
Right. Yeah, I think for me, like, the surgery is as powerful as my outward declarations of my truth. Mm. So, like, me first coming out as trans and changing my pronouns, and then changing my name, like, a few years later, and then getting surgery, like, those are all... Mm-hmm. Completely different experiences physically, but spiritually they are all like outward manifestations and declarations of this journey of listening to my voice of intuition.
That's so, so beautiful.
It's been really spiritual first, yeah. my trans experience. And then I've wanted to make sure that my decisions that I make are in alignment with that voice that said, hey, something's different. Mm-hmm. This isn't feeling good. And then I said, I'm trans. And I said, hey, that feels good. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, and then I was looking at my face and it was like quiet, quiet voice, sometimes screaming loud voice. Hey, this doesn't feel good. And then I saw my virtual FFS and then I was like, oh, that feels good. Mm-hmm. And it's like, just, I just think that that voice is what guides us all. And I think that the folks who are trans naysayers, unfortunately are more caught up in their voice of fear and anger and pain over their fear of intuition.
Yeah.
Because intuition says...
Or their voice of intuition.
Or their voice of... Yeah. Yeah. Or their voice of intuition. It makes sense, but it doesn't make sense that my journey of finding comfort makes so many people uncomfortable.
Right. When we're really... like, I'm very much staying in my lane. Mm-hmm. I'm not even trying to, like, make this anyone else's problem. I'm right. taking responsibility for my discomfort and yes. saying, I'm going to do something about this. And then, like, that's why... It's so clear to me that trans people are in the right and these folks who are trying to like squash us are not.
Yeah.
Because we're the ones in our lane trying to take care of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And they are in our lane also.
Yeah.
Trying to
stop us.
Trying to stop us.
Yeah. It's like we are chasing comfort and they are uncomfortable.
Yeah. They're and instead of them being like, oh, I'm going to take responsibility for my discomfort as well, mm-hmm. just like this person right. is doing, and I'll do something about it. Mm-hmm. I'll go to therapy. I'll right. journal.
Mm-hmm. Just journal.
I'll try to unpack what about this person living their truth and being in, you know, making choices to feel more comfortable in their skin is making me so deeply uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Like, just own it, babe.
And then they always say to us, like, your triggers are your problems. Mm-hmm. But then they're being triggered by literally us just existing. And then they want to make it our problem by erasing us.
Right.
By literally just making us disappear.
They're like, that's all. I just want you to, like, literally kill yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Is it so wrong?
Is that such a bad, like... They're like, your trigger, your problem. Now, get out of my face, you bitch.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's what they're saying.
That's literally what they're saying. Anyway, we're right, they're wrong.
We're right, they're wrong. Why isn't that clear to everybody? Let's write a song about that.
I'm right.
You're wrong.
You go around like you're right. But you're wrong. And I'm right. You've got me on my toes.
Okay, I want to know what you're in love with.
I'm in love with... I'm in love with tippy toes.
Really?
No, okay. No. No, you say what you're in love with first.
Okay, cool.
What are you in love with, baby?
Okay, I'm in love with my mom. Aww. I love my mom. She's been like such a supportive presence in my life, and also recently, like with this FFS journey, it wouldn't be possible without her help. And it's just been amazing the way she's shown up for me. Mm. And I feel so grateful to have a mom like that. That's and I think beautiful. Everyone deserves a mom like that.
Everyone deserves an Ellen.
Everyone deserves an Ellen. I named myself after my mom.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
I'm in love with Shopify.com. Shopify.com. I'm transferring my entire Squarespace website over to Shopify. It's really complicated and I am really overwhelmed trying to do this, but I know it's going to be better in the long run. Mm-hmm. You've seen me do this before with other things I've learned.
Yeah.
I am a web designer.
You are.
I design websites.
You're like Spider-Man.
I'm like Spider-Man. Does he do that?
You're a web designer.
Web. I'm also in love with Back to the Future.
Oh, yeah. We watched Back to the Future last night. Great film.
It was my first time seeing it. I loved it.
It's really good. We should watch the second one.
Let's do that tonight.
Cool.
All right.
Anyway, let's go do that.
I love you. I love you.
I love you.
Cheers. Cheers.
Get ready for a new face.
New face.
I'm going to peel my face. Only got $20,000. $20,000 in my funny.
I need more money. Give me $10,000.
Please go donate and share my GoFundMe. Love you.
Trans in love. Take an hour, say a while.
I love you.
Love you.